My name is Roxy Lee, and I'm an older person and have time to look through old things in the house. And I ran across this magazine called The Alaska Sportsman. And it was published many, many years ago, and still being published, I believe, called The Alaska Magazine. Anyhow, in this article on the date of October 1960, a man by the name of August Bushman wrote some of his tales of first coming to Alaska. August Bushman is related right in Petersburg still with Ron Bushman. So August was Ron Bushman's great uncle. And before I start about the tales of August Bushman, I'll read a little part of the editor's note that was written in this October 1960 article. The name of August Bushman has long been synonymous with the pioneering days of salmon canning in Alaska and the early days of Petersburg, Alaska. It was August Bushman's father, Peter Bushman, for whom Petersburg, this picturesque and prosperous community, was named. The elder Bushman emigrated from Norway to the United States in 1891 with his wife and eight children, located temporarily in Tacoma, Washington. Peter Bushman was a large-scale processor of herring in Norway, and the rich fish resources of the Pacific Northwest and Alaska drew his attention early. In 1893, Peter Bushman took his young son August to Ketchikan, where the 60-foot sailing schooner Volunteer was employed in the business of catching and salting halibut. That was the beginning of the Bushman story in Alaska. A long succession of cannery, salting, and icing ventures followed. In that first venture, most of the halibut were caught from dories, or large skiffs, out of Ketchikan, and fletched and salted in the hold of the vessel. In Ketchikan, the fish was repacked and boxed for shipment to Seattle on the once-a-month steamboat. After that initial halibut venture, the Bushmans purchased a large skiff and some halibut gear, rowing the outfit to Loring on Naha Inlet. Here, the two of them headquartered, fishing halibut, dogfish, and shark. The halibut were salted, and the livers of the dogfish and shark were boiled in a large tank for lubricating oil that sold at that time in the Seattle market for around 25 cents a gallon. Many other fish plants and ventures followed, and more of the Bushman family moved to the North Country's fabulous and largely unexploited fishing grounds. The whole Bushman story would fill many volumes, but we in particular at the Alaska Sportsman magazine are happy to bring you portions of one of Alaska's most fabulous family histories in the words of the man who best knew those early times of which he was such an important part. This is August Bushman talking. Alaska knew me first when I was 13, sailing out of Ketchikan as cook and deckhand on the schooner Volunteer, fishing halibut in the spring at the extreme tip of the Alaska Panhandle, and later salmon in the bays and inlets. The schooner was operated by my father, Peter Bushman, who during that season of 1893 was also looking for a good salmon cannery site, which we located. The next year, he built and operated his first salmon cannery, and I helped. It was at the entrance of Mink Arm, a branch of Boca de Cadre Inlet, south of Ketchikan, named for an early Spanish explorer in Alaska. Almost yearly thereafter, we built a cannery, saltery, or hatchery, and in 1896, I, with the assistance of an Indian named Paul, built the cabin required to validate a trade and manufacturing site that Father had located at the north end of Wrangell Narrows, on which he built another cannery and a sawmill. This was a very strategic fishery location, and later became known as the town of Petersburg, named for my father. In 1897, I worked for Father at a mild cure salmon saltery on the south side of Taku Inlet, not far from Taku Glacier, from which hundreds and at times thousands of tons of ice broke off into icebergs whenever a steamer close by and blew its whistle. This location was unique, as the contour of the solid rock shoreline was almost perpendicular from the bottom up to above high water mark, where it flattened off to a large shelf on which the saltery was built. No wharf or dock was necessary, since at high tide the steamers of 1,000 tons or more could land alongside the solid, perpendicular rock wall. They would tie fast to a large ring bolt at each end, and we unloaded cargo and rolled the 800-pound tierces of mild-cured king salmon from the saltery on board the steamers on heavy planks without difficulty. I knew of no other location where this is possible. During that year, Father, Mother, my sister, and I celebrated our 4th of July by making ice cream at the foot of a dead glacier across the inlet known as Norris Glacier. My first experience as a boss came in 1899, when Father sent me to Bartlett Bay, a small cove at the entrance to Glacier Bay, to operate a red salmon saltery he had acquired. Glacier Bay has several long arms at the heads of which there were large glaciers, including Muir Glacier. On a beautiful summer day, while sitting in our small, modest log cabin dining room, waiting for the cook to announce lunch, I suddenly felt a very severe and unusual movement, and to my surprise, I saw my trunk across the room moving toward me. I then realized we were having a very severe earthquake that lasted several minutes. The cook's helper, a boy of 12, ran into the cabin as white as a ghost. He had been walking around in a large Indian cemetery located on top of sand dunes behind the camp, and while this severe movement was on, he thought the Indians buried there were coming to life. This was the worst quake I have ever experienced. The center was about 170 miles away, close to Yakutat, where I was told three small islands came to the surface as a result. In 1958, Yakutat was again convulsed by a tremendous quake. Few lives were lost, for even today this portion of the Alaska coast is but sparsely inhabited. Ice broken from the glaciers by the earthquake of 1899 formed bergs as large as buildings and jammed Glacier Bay and icy straits almost solid, making it dangerous and almost impossible for large steamers to navigate this area for several days. For some time thereafter, steamers often made long detours to escape the many large ice floes while going to and from Juneau and other ports to the westward. The tender White Fang that generally served our salting station could not push her way into Bartlett Bay for 2 weeks, and even then with difficulty on account of floating ice. For years thereafter, large steamers had to proceed carefully through icy straits to avoid hitting icebergs. My first experience as superintendent in charge of building and operating a salmon cannery was in 1900, when I was 20 years old. This was at Sitco Bay off Chatham Strait. Father sent me out from Petersburg in charge of this crew, an expedition with orders to build and operate a cannery there that year. Lumber and supplies during construction were furnished by cannery tenders and scows from Petersburg, about 120 miles distant. The winter had been severe, and unfortunately, the ice remained late, which necessitated dragging a substantial portion of the lumber and supplies a couple of miles on sleds over the ice until the ice broke up. We were ready for canning when the fish came and had a successful season with a pack of 60,000 cases. In 1906, at the age of 26, I was employed by the Northwestern Fisheries Company of Seattle as superintendent of their Santa Ana salmon cannery, located on Santa Ana Inlet between Ketchikan and Wrangell. In the fall of that year, after the cannery was closed for the winter, I was instructed to proceed to Hunter Bay, located about 165 miles by boat from Santa Ana, on the west coast of Prince of Wales, where this company owned another salmon cannery which had been closed for several years. My mission was to determine which repairs to foundations, buildings, and machinery were necessary to put the plant into operating condition for the 1907 salmon canning season. I proceeded to Wrangell from Santa Ana Cannery, where I boarded the small local 65-foot passenger ship, the Ella Rolfe, which took me to Hunter Bay Cannery, where I was greeted by the watchman and also by Craig Millar, who, associated with his father, had salted salmon bellies in the area for many years. They had sold their Hunter Bay location to the Pacific Steam Whaling Company, which built a cannery there in 1896, one of the oldest in this part of Alaska. Craig had done considerable hunting when time permitted, was an excellent shot, and loved the sport. I stayed several days at Hunter Bay Cannery, checking necessary repairs and getting fishing information. When the Ella Rolfe, the boat, came by again on her regular trip, Craig and I boarded her, bound for Ketchikan. A strong south coaster was blowing, but its real strength was not realized before we arrived off Mexico Head, a promontory facing Dixon Entrance and the Pacific Ocean, about 10 miles from Hunter Bay. After we passed Mexico Head into open water, the size of the swells and the velocity of the storm increased momentarily. After bucking the storm for about 2 hours, we were off a point locally called the Brown Bear. By this time, the storm had reached gale proportions, and using all the power this boat's machinery could muster, it became doubtful whether we could make it around Cape Shaken, the southern end of Prince of Wales. After another long hour of this strenuous bucking against the gale, the decks awash most of the time, we were off Point Nunes, where the course was changed and we were heading for Cape Shaken. The swell and combers were now more on the beam or broadside. Our boat often rolled her sides under and was constantly awash. Having steered this course for some time, we were finally off the entrance to Nichols Bay, in which there is a beautiful landlocked harbor. Since the velocity of the gale was increasing and the waters became more and more turbulent between Point Nunes and Cape Shaken, from the strong tide rips prevalence there, the captain decided to run before the gale into Nichols Bay and relieve the passengers from the terrific strain and discomfort they had been subjected to for several hours after passing Mexico Head. We were about 50 miles from Ketchikan and the passengers were delighted to learn of this decision. We were soon anchored in Nichols Bay, where the water was quiet and we could relax comfortably while the gale continued outside. After we had enjoyed a good meal, Craig and I decided to row ashore and try to shoot a deer, since they are fat in the fall and the meat is delicious. We borrowed a couple of carbines, put on our boots, slickers, and southwesters, launched one of the small lifeboats, and pulled ashore, landing on the north and lee side of the peninsula, about 3/4 of a mile across. We made our deer calls from small alder branches, Craig going to the right and I to the left around the shore. When I reached a point about opposite the middle of the peninsula, I went into the woods very cautiously and occasionally blew my deer call. The spruce and hemlock trees were large and tall, and the underbrush was quite thick in places, so it was difficult at times to see clearly as far as a couple of 100 feet in any direction. Since it was raining and the strong gale blowing created a heavy mist, I walked slowly through the underbrush, stopping occasionally to look, listen, and blow my deer call. After a short walk, I thought I was about in the center of the peninsula. I was proceeding very slowly in a crouched position with my rifle always ready for action, when suddenly I heard a shot from my left and immediately realized I'd been hit, but felt no pain. I called at the top of my voice in case another shot might be fired, not knowing who had shot me. The soft-nosed bullet grazed my left arm just above the wrist, took up part of the bone, went through the flesh of my left leg about 1.5 inches above my kneecap, and shattered the stock of my gun. A minute or two later, to my surprise, Craig came walking along, and when he realized he had mistaken me for a deer and shot me, the expression on his face was one of surprise and alarm. I told him they were only flesh wounds and did not hurt. Very little blood was flowing, so there was nothing to worry about. After discussing the accident briefly, we tied a handkerchief tightly above the wound on my leg and one below the knee, then bandaged my arm, picked up what was left of my gun, and with Craig supporting me, we walked slowly to the boat. While walking leisurely to the beach, Craig told me that he saw an object through the underbrush and that it looked like a deer. Then he heard a deer call, and after looking very carefully several times, he saw the head, horns, and neck of a large buck. He first aimed at the hind quarter, but when he positively saw the head and neck, he aimed at the neck, since he did not want to shatter the hind quarter and spoil the meat. He made an excellent shot. After reaching the beach, we boarded our boat, and Craig rowed me to the Ella Rolfs, anchored a short distance away. After arriving in my stateroom, a basin of hot water was brought up to clean the wounds, but to our surprise, there was no medicine on board, so we used kerosene as a substitute. A lady passenger was kind enough to loan us her small silk handkerchief, which we used to use to clean and pull through the leg wound from time to time. We were storm-bound at the anchorage for almost 2 days until the storm was over and we were able to proceed. At Ketchikan, I was taken to a comfortable room in the Stedman Hotel and immediately called Dr. J. L. Myers, who came over and dressed my wounds properly, after cutting away the loose flesh in and on both sides of the leg, where gangrene was setting in. While Dr. Myers was cutting away the loose flesh and cleaning out the wound on my leg, was the first time I felt pain of any consequence. He said it was lucky we arrived when we did. After being quiet for a few days, I was permitted to walk around on crutches and leave for Seattle. In Seattle, I walked on crutches quite comfortably for about 2 weeks, after which I was as well as ever and have felt no ill effects from this experience during these last 53 years. August Bushman was 80 when he wrote this article. Thanks for listening.